So I'm TJ Myhill. It's really, really early Sunday morning, so I wore a really bright shirt to wake everyone up.
You'll be wearing it this afternoon, too.
I will be, because, you know,
maybe too late
to carry extra clothes. But you are present to see what my wife has called the least DragonCon outfit ever. So, I'm an attorney here in Atlanta. I do IP and technology law for the most part. I'm a litigator, which makes me a little different than Courtney. That's basically what I do, and basically the viewpoint I'll be chipping in with today. So.
I'm Courtney Lytle. I am an attorney here in Atlanta. I practice part-time. I teach part-time. I'm more of an academic than a practitioner, but some of my clients just will not go away. So what can you do? I have been practicing for 20 years. I started out as an M&A lawyer. I became an IP lawyer, and it's way more fun. I've been teaching copyright law and intellectual property law for quite a while as well, and I've even published a really boring textbook that none of y'all have read. Please don't read it. It's boring. It's a textbook. But I think will be the resident Luddite for the panel. I, you know, turn things off on my phone. It's smart, but I don't use it. So I will represent the Luddites in the room. Of course, there are none in this panel, but every now and again I have to chime in.
How have you beat? I still have a flip phone.
Mine broke. I cried when mine broke because I couldn't get another one.
Yeah.
I'm rough on phones, and mine broke, and they wouldn't sell me another one. And I liked it when I realized that at one point when I had flipped it open, I realized subconsciously I was waiting for the little chirp.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say, you know, Kirk to Enterprise. And when I realized that was why I was so emotionally attached to that phone, it's like I'm just waiting for it to chirp. So I'm flipping it open with the, you know, happy Shatner elbow flip. But anyway.
I just like that I didn't butt dial everybody in my contacts list.
I'm Tim Farley. I'm probably better known across the hall in the skeptic track, but I do a blog called SkepTools where I advise skeptics who blog and criticize quacks and pseudoscience and other nonsense online. And so my interest in Right to be Forgotten has to do with potential abuses of it and how it can be used to shut down speech online and advising people on what they can do to know when this is happening and defend themselves against it.
Hey, my name is Jeff Termeshazen. I used to work for a company that did audio and video monitoring and analysis. I now work for a payments company. I have a master's in cybersecurity and looking at a master's in international security and intelligence studies.
Just don't get a JM. Well, so we're here today to talk about the right to be forgotten, which doesn't actually exist in the U.S. yet. So we're just kind of looking down the road at what might come because of what they've done in the European Union. Let's talk a little bit about what it is and what it isn't right now. What it is, we don't know, because it's still kind of shaping up, and we're going to have to see how it plays out. What it isn't is what we already have. I recognize some of you, so I know some of you were at the revenge porn panel. We talked a whole lot at that panel about the right of privacy. But the right of privacy and the right to be forgotten are not the same thing, because a right of privacy is, this is my private fact, I don't want you to disclose it. It's not a public fact. So here's the naked picture I sent my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my wife, my husband. That's a private fact. Here's my mugshot. That's a public fact. You might want it to be private, and that's what the right to be forgotten is about, or what they're trying to make it about. Mm-hmm. But that's not the same thing. You have no right of privacy over your public records, your arrest records, the things that have already been out there and made public. That's a whole different can of worms, and that's what the right to be forgotten is looking at. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, distinct from the laws that already exist for privacy and publicity.
A little bit, I guess, about the what we started with the court in the European Community. They allowed he was a Spaniard, wasn't he?
Spaniard,
had some run-ins with the law years ago and now really didn't like the fact that people could find that out still. And he's like, it's old news, it's nobody's business anymore, no one should still be able to find this out, it bothers me because people who do credit checks on me, people who do, you know, if I want to run for office, whatever he was trying to do, his old indiscretions, shall we say, were coming up. But they were not, you know, whoopsie, I sent, you know, reply all as opposed to my wife with that, you know, an embarrassing shot or whatever. It was, you know, criminal record stuff, things he had done, things he had been convicted of that are indeed public record. And he's like, but it's so long ago, I don't like it still impacting my life. And the court agreed.
Mm-hmm.
The court said, okay, you have the right to have those things expunged. But then they, one of the problems that I have seen expressed many places about this whole concept in the EU is they did what they often do, which is then said, yep, okay, so go Google, make that happen. And so here's Google going, I'm a for-profit corporation. I do economic planning. And it's just been instructed by the EU to make this balance against public right to know and individuals' rights to not have things known. And Google is somehow supposed to, without any guidance, make that judgment. Google is supposed to make that judgment. Google, last I checked, was a, you know, for-profit company in charge of quietly taking over the world. And you're giving them this obligation to make a judicial balancing act without much guidance at all. So Google kind of said, and said, okay, sure, we'll take your stuff down. They were instantly flooded with people saying, yeah, take mine down too. And I guess, as last I heard, they were kind of churning through. I'm going, okay. But, you know, first there's the question in my mind of whether it really can be erased, and we'll let the tech guys approach that more directly. But the EU has announced this right and then completely abdicated enforcement of it,
right,
and not given it any teeth or any rules, and said, yeah, Google, go take care of that for me.
And the problem for Google, I mean, in terms of getting through those floods of documents, is that Google is algorithm-based. We all know all the famous Google algorithms that figure out where your website's going to come up on page 1 or page 21, and how do you get it higher, and who do you pay to do your SEO to get you from page 21 to 19, and blah, blah, blah. The problem is that when they get these reports in, they're going to some guy who's got to look at it and make a determination. And there is no algorithm. There's a guy at a desk with a stack of these. And at Google, there's a lot of guys, a lot of desks. But it's still, it's a very, very, it's a difficult undertaking, even without looking at the consequential decisions of, is this or is this not something that we ought to be taking
it's
down.
It's something that they shouldn't have to do in the first place, and now they're overwhelmed with the paperwork to do it.
We're recording, so you need the big orange cube. Yeah. Throw the cube.
Hurl a cube at him.
There you go.
It's yeah.
Yeah, and it's the expectation that Google will then, of course, be required to do this free of charge.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Because
the
EU
now
told them to. That's socialism. That's how we do it.
One of the things to understand about Google is they're very algorithm-based. They want everything to be run off the algorithm and automatically, and they don't want to interfere with the search results, because every time it sort of opens a can of worms. Every time they make a manual tweak to something, that opens the possibility of someone else asking for another manual tweak. And this has been done a few times, but there was a famous incident a few years ago where somebody noticed that if you went to Google and you typed the word Jew into Google, the very first result was a horrible, horrible hate site, anti-Semitic hate site. And people were, you know, angry at Google that this was showing up. And they said, well, you know, that's the way our algorithm works. And they were so against the idea of tweaking it and taking that site out manually that the way they combated that for a long time, and they've since tweaked it a little bit differently, but for a long time, what would happen when you typed Jew, you'd get the hate site, it would still be there on the top, but there would be an ad. You know how those ads appear at the top of the Google results? There would be an ad that Google itself had paid for that said an explanation of these search results. And it would go to a page on Google's site and it would say, you know, we're sorry that this horrible, horrible site is showing up first in the results. So that was an example of how against, you know, these manual tweaks they are, that instead of tweaking it, they actually use their own system, in this case their ad system that happens to be on the same page, to combat a problem with a hate site in their own search results. Now, since then, they have done other manual tweaking. There have been lawsuits, for instance, over the auto-suggest, where you type stuff in and, you know, people would type someone's name and the auto-suggest would come up and it would have some horrible adjective mm-hmm. after the person's name, and that person would sue Google and say, why is this here? And they would say, well, it's there because millions of people are
have
typing that.
Your problem isn't us.
But they've lost some of those lawsuits. In this particular lawsuit with the Spaniard, he was suing Google to get that particular result taken out of their search results, and that's why it fell to them.
But hang on, why would he be suing them to take it out of the search results and not going after the source document and having that pulled from public rec, or at least...
Because there's really not an ability to get a lot of things pulled from the public record once you get there. I mean, arrest records vary by state or jurisdiction as to what you can and can't get down and how, and what you can have expunged and what you've had to do to get it expunged. But
usually it's there forever.
You know, the thing is, this is one quick thing, and I'll get it. The reality here is that we're dealing with an artifact of the digital age. I mean, this is something that didn't exist. I did a lot of stupid shit when I was in my 20s, but nobody had a digital camera and nobody Facebook. And so none of you know about it.
Ha ha ha.
But
you can search it won't come up.
Right.
I have the film.
But if you're 20 now and you're doing the same stupid shit, it's going up on the internet and it's going to be there forever. And if I got arrested in, 1985, God, what the hell would I have been doing to get arrested in 1985?
But drinking underage.
Let's assume someone got arrested in 1985. That mugshot's always going to be there. That record's always going to be there, but it's in some county register somewhere that if you really want to find out if I've ever been arrested and you want to go from county to county and look my name up in that book, you're welcome to it. But now you type my name into Google and it comes
poof,
up.
Poof, there it is. It's very different.
So all of these data points always existed and they always have been there. And you could have always found them about me. But you would have to go hunt down all my friends and say, do you have any embarrassing pictures of TJ? You would have to go to every library in the country and see if there were any news articles on microfiche about TJ. Now, I hear somebody's new name, and the first thing I do is type it in my phone and go, huh, who's that person? Oh, look at that. Yeah. So that's the problem. The problem is not that this data exists and has always existed and has always been, a thing that will follow you forever. The problem now is that everybody can find it within 5 minutes of meeting you.
There's also a jurisdictional, I don't remember exactly where, I believe,
almost drive, it was supposed to chirp.
I believe it was a news story, it was actually not the actual record of this guy, and it was like a debt, unpaid debt, or a defaulted mortgage or something like that. That this guy was suing over. But what can happen is it won't actually be the record that's showing up, but it'll be a news story. And if the news story is in a jurisdiction outside your country, like for instance, suppose in this case, and I don't know the exact details, but suppose it was an American newspaper that had reported on this guy for some reason, but it was showing up in the Google.es results under his name, he would have a big problem suing that American newspaper to remove the actual article. But he could sue Google because they're operating in Spain. Mm-hmm. So that's what he, and because it was showing up under his name, a lot of people who don't have a big presence online, fairly weird things will show up under their name right up near the top of the result. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I can advise that if you're worried about stuff showing up under your name in Google is have a presence online. Have a Twitter account under your name. You don't have to use it a lot, but have it. Have a YouTube channel, put a few things in there so that when people Google your name, some fairly innocuous things show up, and it'll push these obscure news stories from 14 years ago down onto the second or third page of the results, and it's not as much of a problem. That's kind of a proactive way that you can do a right to be forgotten on yourself.
Does this actually...
There
it goes. So a quick comment on that last point, and then I'll... isn't it possible that by establishing a presence online in that fashion, you're likely to confirm that it's you, whereas if somebody just searches a random name, there might be like 5 or 10 Jane something or another.
Right.
But conceivably, if you've confirmed that you're on the internet and you have a presence, it might actually potentially be worse for you if you really are aiming for higher levels of privacy. And earlier, relating to Google's manually or being asked to manually filter their algorithm-built search results, the example that comes to mind with that I think predates the right to be forgotten privacy issue is DMCA complaints. And I'm wondering how you would compare that as a deviation from what Google would like to be doing with this question of how do they exercise judgment and build a procedure for something where there's less legal guidance.
Well, I'll jump in on that real quick. You know, I've spoken on the DMCA here for a number of years, so that's something that the difference between the DMCA and the right to be forgotten, at least as it exists right now, is that there is a very clear-cut procedure for the DMCA, mm-hmm. and there is a very clear-cut procedure for what Google or anyone else needs to do, and there is a very clear-cut remedy for wrongful use.
Right.
When you send a DMCA takedown notice, there is a specific form and format that it must be in, and it has to be sworn and it has to be signed. And if all of those things are done correctly, Google makes no decisions whatsoever. There is no question of, is this content that should be taken down? Is this really your copyright? Is this fair use? Is there any reason why I shouldn't take this down? No, they make no decision. They got your paper, they said, it's down.
And then if the other side appeals, then it's, you know, it's very detailed and it was done that way on purpose because Congress at least did recognize that, you know, neither Google nor YouTube should be making fair use decisions. So we made it very clear, they made it very clear. If A, then B, if C, then D, you know, and then lawsuit.
Right.
And so they don't, it's a procedure and it's easy.
But here Google has to make that categorical decision of,
should this be down or should this not be down? Now, what goes into that decision? Oh, good grief. We could spend an hour here coming up with all kinds of ideas,
right.
Most of which would be contradictory. Good luck, Google.
Didn't the same thing there happen with the DMCAs when they were first coming out, when Rhea and them were just filing those massive John Doe lawsuits? And it sort of evolved into what it is now.
Mm-hmm. Sure, but even then, I mean,
it was
the thing,
learning curve,
right? Well, right, and there's still abuse of it. Well,
sure.
Let's not be wrong. There's still abuse of the DMCA. But the thing is, with the DMCA, that there's a remedy in place. You can have your information put back, and if there's a real problem, you can have a lawsuit. But if we implemented that same idea, where you know, if you file a proper and well done form, I have to take your searches off the search record, Google would no longer exist because no one would be able to search anything. I'd send a right to be forgotten notice on every single thing I've ever done that I didn't like, and you know, there'd be three hits left on me.
And now, they'd all be really nice.
Did that also include other search engines, Bing, Yahoo, any of those,
yes.
Or was it specific to Google?
Well, this lawsuit was against Google, but Bing has said that they're going to start that they're taking, as of July 17th, I think, a little later than Google, they're taking takedown requests too.
Right. Otherwise, they're just going to get sued too.
Yeah. They have lawyers.
Right. we need to throw the box around. Oh, you got it there.
Two very quick questions. So one is, in this lawsuit, from a legal standpoint, why did they make the choice to go after the search engine and not the choice to go after the endpoint where the data is?
Well, Oh, sorry, go ahead.
So that was the first, like, why did they go after that? And then the second question is, from a legal perspective, with this right to be forgotten, how do you see that potentially impacting the right or correct information? There are so many people who want incorrect information forgotten that impacts their lives, their job searches. How do you see that potentially being an impact?
Well, that's really the issue, isn't it? I mean, to answer the first question, that's what we were just talking about. That's a jurisdictional issue. You can sue Google in Spain. You can't sue the New York Times in Spain, necessarily.
Even if it were a Spanish newspaper,
right.
Now I don't know Spanish law, but American newspapers, if what they wrote was accurate,
you can't,
then they can say, you know, no, we're leaving it up. And there's no arrest records or public record also. Different jurisdictions have policies as to when they will erase and when they won't. And the usual is they don't. It's there forever. But until recently, no one could find it, like TJ was saying, unless you went to the courthouse and found the records and dug through them. And there are people who did that for money. I mean, those were their jobs. I guess they're out of work now. But the idea with the newspapers is, you know, what they wrote was correct. And they posted it on their website with everything else. If they had been targeting him somehow, he might have been able to go after him. If what they had written was incorrect or libelous or something, then he might have had an action to get it taken down against them. But what they wrote was true. And they posted it along with everything else they wrote that day. So they did nothing wrong. And he has no right to force them to take it down because it's just news.
So the only right you have is to say, shove that further down or in the Google research or don't let it be found.
There is also a technical aspect to that, because even if they did hit the endpoint, the internet being what it is, you've got
it's still there.
Wayback Machine that's still archiving it, so getting the endpoint taken down doesn't remove it from the internet.
Now, as far as your second question, that's exactly the issue. I mean, this is only going to be used for correct information. The reality is we already have laws for means of taking down incorrect or false information. That's defamation, and there are clear cut laws. Well, there are no clear cut laws, but there are laws in place that
already protect that.
Use to get that taken down.
The procedures are not perfect.
Correct. Like, I know people whose credit history is incorrect, and it impacts their job, it impacts their medical insurance, it impacts their bills. It's wrong information. And it takes years to correct it. And I'm not talking identity.
We didn't say the system was good. We said there is one.
So okay.
But that goes to what Jeff was saying, though. That's a matter of the system. You've got to get through your credit reporting agency, which is going to be pretty slow in itself to prove that it's false and get it corrected. And once they correct it, you've got to go to the other credit reporting agency.
Yeah, I mean, there's three credit agencies to start with. There's other places it's recorded.
Yep.
And each of them has an interest in making sure that their information is accurate, so they're not going to just take stuff down because you say so. Because,
right.
You know, lots of people would like them to take stuff off their credit record and are not above lying, saying, but that's not true, that wasn't me. Well, yeah, actually it was. So the credit agencies have to go through and figure out if what you're telling them is true. Anything like that's going to take time. And it's frustrating as anything when it's your stuff that's wrong and you want to buy that car or that house. And you have to convince them, no, really, I didn't declare bankruptcy in 1972. You know, I promise I didn't. And they say, oh, no, yes, you did. And it takes a long time. I had a tax lien on my credit rating for a while for property I had never owned. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure that I didn't owe taxes on that I didn't pay because I never owned it. Please take it off. And that took me a while. And it was obviously not me.
Right.
It wasn't even the same name anywhere in a courthouse. But it took some time to get that off. That's just, you know, machines move slowly.
And then once that comes off, you've got to get it off every other place that has reported it over the years. So that's, I mean, it is a process. But that's the same
process
we're dealing with now.
Yeah.
What we've got to do now with the true information and the correct information that you've just decided you want to be forgotten, how do we get all that processed through and taken down and forgotten from the Wayback Machine
and the big difference
itself?
There from a policy standpoint, I think is the interesting one, is what should be taken down. It makes sense that if I have something on the internet that's not correct, I should be able to get that down. It's like, no, that's not true about me, take it off. Okay, most people agree that's fair. If it's not true and it's being said about me, I should be able to get it down. Well, what if it's true and I just don't like it? Where does my right to not be embarrassed, you know, overlap with the rest of the world's right to find out stuff and have accurate knowledge? And that's the policy call. Before we can say how should it be done, the question is what should be done? Is it even right to allow people to take down accurate information just because they said, oh, well, that was 10 years ago. It was so long ago. It's not relevant anymore. I don't like it. That's really what this whiny guy was saying was, you know, it was a long time ago. It's very tired, old, outdated information. 10 years, I think it was, you know. But should that be done? Should you be allowed to take stuff down just because you don't like it? Is there a societal right to know that counters your right to hide stuff that you wish you hadn't done?
Right, and that's even come up within European law itself. There's laws regarding the news industry, for instance, that say there's a public right to know certain information. And early on in this, Google took some articles down and got a big backlash where certain news articles about, you know, people who had been convicted for fraud and things like that, recent stuff, had been taken down and then put back up into the search engine. And people, you know, there was a big Streisand effect on that, you know, because people were paying attention. So one of the things Google did, because they were worried about, you know, this being abused, is they started putting this into their webmaster notifications. And this is something that I blogged about because I do a blog where I advise webmasters and online activists in the skeptic realm, and they do a lot of criticizing of people. So they naturally, when you criticize people, they get angry at you. So I expect that it will, I have not detected an instance where this has happened, but I expect that they will start, European-based people of that nature will, and we're talking about quacks or people who are selling fraudulent products or claiming it's scientific and it's not, products that don't work, that they will start to use this against people, bloggers. And so it's very important that you do your homework as a blogger or a webmaster. And what you need to do is make sure that you have your blog registered into what's called Google Webmaster Tools. Essentially, that's a process of where you verify that, hey, this here's my email address. I am the webmaster for this domain. So if anything's going wrong with you guys, Google, regarding my website, here's how you reach me. And they give you this nice console, and they'll tell you when Google has trouble crawling your site or if something's wrong with your site in the index or if you've done something wrong that Google doesn't like in terms of how they index websites. And through that process, they will tell you if someone files a right to be forgotten request. People have already gotten these notifications. I've seen some screenshots of them. And so it's very important that you get registered in that if you ever write about European people. Obviously, in the United States, the First Amendment counteracts this, and this law doesn't apply to us anyway.
Unless we pass a law that says otherwise.
Right. But if you do criticize Europeans, your blog post could be removed from the European search engine. So, for instance, your blog post may still show up in Google.com here in the United States, but if somebody searched for your blog in google.co.uk, it suddenly wouldn't be there. The other thing to guard against this and to keep an eye out for is that Google put in that they weren't required to, is at the bottom of search results that are affected by this, they put a little one-line notice at the bottom of the page that says some results were removed from this due to the right to be forgotten decision.
Asterisk.
Right. So if you're ever Googling someone's name
and
you see that, you know, take note of it.
That's like pleading the Fifth Amendment. I'm going to assume the worst now. Yeah. I see that. You're a terrible person.
What did you get taken down?
Now, a question on that. In ACTA, we saw that the U.S. could not get those laws passed here, so they started putting them into the trade negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If that goes in, could I don't suppose it would be in the U.S.'s interest to try and do the same thing, but could someone else go and say, well, you guys have basically put this into trade negotiations and said that because other countries have got these laws, the U.S. needs to get this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Europe's passed this, therefore it should, under similar conditions, apply in the U.S. as well, even though we have no laws on this.
Proper treaties, I mean, you can certainly get things backdoored in. But here again, we have the First Amendment to counter that, and there is a little bit of that there's going to be a lot of pushback if it tries being applied, but it certainly can get applied, or it can just get passed. I mean, all we need is a couple of congressmen to realize all those dead hookers can go away. And, yeah, this gets passed in the U.S. immediately.
For those of you who don't know, ACTA is sort of a group of a whole bunch of legislation that various members of Congress have tried to get passed, doing things like restricting access to the Internet and restricting what you can and can't do there and whatnot, and they've all failed due to citizens standing up against it. And so the runaround on that is that they make a part of trade negotiations and then say, well, this is now a treaty issue, and therefore it's no longer under Congress's purview, and it's now, I think it's it's higher than Congress? It's like just under the Constitution?
The Senate has to approve it.
Okay, so the Senate still has to approve it, but it's out of the House's jurisdiction?
The House has no say. Right. The Senate has to approve it. Oftentimes,
it's approved a treaty.
Yeah, the treaty. Oftentimes, treaties are not self-effectuating, and you have to then pass legislation. The copyright law was that way. We signed stuff, right. But then we had to pass the Berne Implementation Act to adapt copyright law to the treaty. Some treaties, I think, are self-effectuating.
They are. But again, if you have a treaty that says you will, you have to comply with Berne. We have to go amend that Copyright Act then to make sure that we comply with Berne. That's why some things have changed in the last several years in copyright. But you have to take those steps, but you're obligated to take the steps by the ratified treaty.
But it is a way that can be, there's an end run around the legislative process, and our current administration is really happy about doing end runs around it when they don't think that they can do what they want to do. Well, just because the law says I can't do this, let me find a way to do it anyway, has right. been kind of their MO from the beginning. And sneaking stuff in through treaties is another thing they're doing, and not just on the IP front, on a lot of other fronts as well.
That's why you lawyers get the big bucks. It's finding those loopholes.
I get big bucks.
So it strikes me, and I'm sorry I came in, if you guys already addressed this, I came in 10 minutes late, it's somewhat
me
early.
Too.
But I was wondering, it strikes me that the right to be forgotten is sort of like an application to an old human consciousness bad patch onto the internet. And I was wondering if you thought that we were likely to see more of these types of decisions come in the future, or if we as a collective society are going to eventually get over it to the point where, you know, your life is Googleable, you just have to grow up with that knowledge, and we all sort of collectively agree, you know what, the 20s are a bad time, just let people grow up before we get around to searching them.
Well, when you say we, what do you mean? You mean the U.S., you mean Western society?
Both.
Well, I think we all need to just accept that our lives are Googleable, and that's just the reality of the world. But I mean, like I said earlier, it's the artifact of the digital age. Do I think though that there's going to be continual pushback? Sure. I mean, especially again, I hate to keep bringing up my old panel, but when you start looking at the things that we're doing with the revenge porn laws, trying to get things taken down, that's a very specific, very discrete issue of an embarrassing disclosure that we want to deal with. But it's something that we really wish didn't happen in digital society. And I think that there's not going to be a very big breach between I don't want my naked ass on the internet to I don't want my mugshot on the internet to I don't want that embarrassing news story about me on the internet to yeah. I would just rather be forgotten about everything that's not good and popular.
It's so, a continuum, I think.
I think there's going to be, there's always going to be some pushback where people try to get stuff removed, but I think that as technology applies, more and more stuff shows up. So it's a teeter-totter.
And none of it's easy to implement because there's not as much regulation as there is in other areas. It's easy to tell the newspapers what they have to do, but the internet is much harder to regulate. But I think with some of like the revenge porn concept, I think everyone could kind of agree that, okay, we've all done stuff that we didn't do, and boy, we're glad there wasn't video that they could post later. And that's the sort of thing that's a private act. It really doesn't, one assumes it's a private act. But, you know, sex is, you know, not something that we all have to know about what you did. So I think most people would agree, yeah, okay, that could be taken down. Well, what about your DUI when you were 18? Well, what about this? Well, what about the fraud conviction? Well, what about that? And as you go up into more public acts, you start to have harder questions. Right. Sex is one of those things that's usually considered in that zone of privacy, and most people just kind of shudder when they think about it, thinking, oh, there, but for the grace of God, and think, okay, let's just take that down. People who, I guess, never had any fun in their 20s think, wow, I don't like children to see that. But whatever, most people would agree, I think, that that is something that should be addressed right. and removed. But the rest of the, you know, as you move further up that continuum to things that are not within that really traditional zone of privacy, we don't have a consensus on where the line should be drawn.
And what about that DUI? What about that DUI when you were 18? Oh, you were a minor. We should get that removed. But what about the DUI on your 21st birthday? Oh, it was your 21st birthday. That was kind of stupid. We're going to give you a pass on that, too. What about your DUI when you're 25? 25, you maybe should have started knowing better. What about the DUI when you're 35? What about the DUI when you're 45 and you're, you know, a bus driver? Where do we make the line? You can't just say we're going to forget your DUIs because that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You can't say that this is something we should all forget about because it's not important. But
there already is the societal agreement also that anything you did as a juvenile does not affect your permanent record. Your juvie crimes are erased when you hit 18 under the theory that juvenile crimes used to be stealing hubcaps and spray painting signs. Now juveniles are doing adult crimes. It's a different issue. But when the juvenile system was set up, it was with the assumption that kids can be fixed. And that just because you were stupid when you were 14 doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to get a job when you're 21. And so the juvenile crimes are expunged from your record. And that was something that's always been the case in our society. That's, again, something that everyone kind of agreed on, and juvie records don't count towards adults. Well, juvie records on the internet, you know, it may not be criminal behavior, but what your kids are doing at 14 are on the internet. Is there a way to expunge that? But again, well, what about 18? What about 21? What about 25? Well, I was 30 when I did that, but I matured really late. You know, there's not an easy thing to implement, and I think that's one of the things that made me nervous, looking at Europe saying, yes, there's a right to be forgotten. I'm like, well, why? What? And who's going to decide? And the answer there is Google. Yeah. Google will decide.
You mentioned earlier that there's multiple copies of Google, excuse me, multiple versions of Google. Obviously, you have Google ES, Google IN for India, and Google.com in the US. All those are accessible within the EU. My question is there any chance that the EU law, because the Google.com is visible, might somehow affect Google.com from the point of view of the court say, well, since you can see that in Europe, you got to modify Google.com also to remove those items?
I would think so.
I think so, too. I mean, again, it's a question of can we reach them? But if we can reach them, then we're going to, yes, the jurisdiction would certainly exist.
Technically, how it can be done, I don't know. But can the law say they must change all of them if they can change one of them? Then sure.
They haven't done it so far. So far, what I've seen is that, and it does apply to all the EU countries, so if you get a request, say, from Belgium, then that person's results are going to be taken out of .co.uk, .es, all the EU countries. And if you've ever logged in while traveling internationally, you know if you just go to Google, it sort of automatically forwards you to the site for the country that it thinks you're in based on the IP address you're coming from.
Can you access Google.com?
You can go to Google.com manually. But, yeah, I haven't seen any talk about, you know, say block either, you know, there's a couple ways they could approach that. They could actually remove the results here on Google.com, or they could just simply block the ability of Europeans to get to Google.com and force them to use Google.es and .co.uk and .pt.
And either of those would seem to me like a likely thing that would want to be done if they're going to develop this right to be forgotten, because if you're supposed to be able to be forgotten, it seems like you should be able to be forgotten across Google, not just on one local Google.
Right. I mean, the problem
if I were writing that policy as a legislator, I would make sure that one way or another it covered all of Google.
Yeah.
And as far as Google goes, again, just like Bing decided to do this on their own, once if it becomes an issue, Google's not going to want to get sued again. So they're going to come in and say, all right, well, if now we put a little notice on it that says there's a right to be forgotten, and everybody immediately goes manually to the U.S. site because they know we can still find it there, we're gonna do something to prohibit that.
I believe that the way this is going to shake out is that for most non-famous people, it's the question is going to be kind of moot, because I'll bet you that guy's results, the guy who did this lawsuit in Spain, his name probably does not show up on Google.com simply because Google does take in local account. Like if you Google things about even generic requests, it knows you're in Atlanta, and it will customize the results based on, hey, this person's in Atlanta, so they may want this Atlanta-based thing that relates to this keyword they did. The same thing happens for name requests, too.
But I wonder if he thought about the fact that by suing him, it became a public record, and even though the right to be forgotten may be enforced, the fact that he filed the
suit...
He's not
going to be forgotten.
He's not going to be forgotten.
There was a definite Streisand
effect.
He's the
poster child for
it. You know, at least for the first few weeks after this happened, you Googled that guy's name, you found out about his debt because
and
you saw all the articles about the right to be forgotten.
Yeah, we all know about it. Now we would have never known the man existed, but now we know about him and his credit defaults.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to jump in and ask about this. Here in America, there are reputation management companies such as Reputation.com, and that is really kind of a check and balance on this. So I think there's this impression in Europe that there's this unchecked American company doing all this stuff, but in fact we have market-driven solutions such as Reputation.com and other reputation management. Now, granted that they can't necessarily do the same thing as the right to be forgotten mechanism, because they're probably focused on pushing down the negative results rather than trying to make them go away. But effectively, if you can push something off the first page, for most people, they're not going to see it because most people don't go to page 2.
Yeah, study after study has shown that people do not go past the first page of the results unless they're really, really, you know, nerds or OCD.
So my question is, isn't there a doctrine of least restrictive means? If there's a market-based solution, then why is the court imposing a different kind of solution on that's not a market-driven solution?
because, and I feel like I've said this at every panel, judges and congressmen are not technologists, and they don't understand. They think, oh, yeah, that shouldn't be on Google. Okay, take that off Google.
There.
We're done. And I mean, there really is, when you get into any implementation of technology in a legal situation, the biggest driving issue is that you have a bunch of people making these decisions that don't have the first clue what they're talking about. Like me and Courtney,
I
down here. We have no idea what the hell we're talking
You've
about.
You've seen me
there.
Say Those it guys, three times no. already. Well, from a legal standpoint, this. From a policy standpoint, this. If I were drafting this, and I'm the kind of person who would end up drafting this kind of crap, I could draft it great, and then I would say, oh, and you guys, make it so. I have no idea what you can and can't do, but this is what I want, so
right.
can you go do that, please? And I'll write a law that kind of says, and then stuff, you know, and it'll be gone. And because I don't know, but I'm the kind of person who writes laws, mm-hmm. not the people who know how to do the technology. And
the best example of that I can think of was the case where the judge in the Sony hack case, as part of the settlement, required him to go get back all the copies on the internet
right.
that people had downloaded.
Right. Right.
She fortunately, after someone clued her into what was happening, and she actually rescinded that part from the judgment. But the original judgment was part of, you know, you're not going to jail forever, is that you've got to go get back everything on the internet.
Make sure they send back those copies
right.
to you.
Right.
And that you shred them.
Right.
So, two of the, or in the United States, we've seen a few random groups of people, as well as some higher profile groups like Wikipedia, make an effort to actually raise the ability of people to see who's doing these types of privacy requests. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. Wikipedia has a site up, if I remember correctly, or a page up for a list of known takedowns. They've actually taken
yeah.
the information from Google.
They're doing what I recommended a minute ago, which is they're registered in Google Webmaster. So when Google sends the notice out to them, they screenshot the notice and put it on a known page on their site, so you can see all the Wikipedia articles that have been affected by this.
Right. So do you anticipate at some point some liability for this, or how does it contribute to the debate? And do we think that possibly the Europeans might bend on this point if it's made sufficiently clear through these methods, provided that they work?
I suspect that I noticed that when Wikipedia was doing it, that they were posting them as screenshots, as graphic screenshots, and I think that was deliberate so that the text of the takedown wouldn't show up in Google, so that there wouldn't be a recursive takedown effect on their takedown page. I think that was their logic there. But yeah, it's an interesting question.
Well, again, I think that's the remedy worse than the issue. You take down, you know, some stupid thing you did when you were 17, and now there's an asterisk on your Google search, or there's a flag on your Wikipedia page, or there's something there, and all I know is, well, you took something down, I'm going to assume you're a child molester.
Yeah, I'm going to. My first thought isn't going to be, you know, 16-year-old indiscretion.
Right.
I've got a much better imagination
right.
than that.
Yeah. See, because part of the problem is that if people were not prone to doing that sort of thing, a lot of these would not be necessary. Mm-hmm. Simply because the guy would say, all right, well, you did something stupid when you're 16, I'm not going to hold it against you now. But companies will go back and go like, all right, well, I found something bad about you, so therefore I'm going to assume that you are still capable of this and punish you even though you've been a model citizen for the past 30, 40 years.
Oftentimes they're, you know, choosing between, you know, y'all have had the case where two of you are up for the job and one person
right.
gets it. And if it comes down to, gosh, they could both do a great job. Well, this guy was a moron when he was 16. This guy either wasn't or didn't get caught. Okay. You know, and, you know, the folks making the hiring decisions have to go on something. And it's that or flip a coin sometimes. They go on that. Well, now you wish you hadn't been an idiot and caught when you were 17.
And I think, though, in some cases there is something of a liability issue because, let's say, you hacked your neighborhood bank when you were 16 and you go and work for a company and you do something similar, they're going to go back and say, well, you did
you
this back
known.
Over here. Mm-hmm. This is a pattern. Why didn't you not hire him back then when you knew he had done this?
Right.
Yep. And again, I mean, that just goes right back to the issue of we all had the same stupid stuff when we were 17, but your boss didn't know about it back then, and now he does.
As an alternative to the right to be forgotten, the people's feeling for desire for the right for knowledge, do you believe this court ruling is going to spawn a more archiving of information and make it more distributed, so it would be hard to actually expunge permanently from the internet?
I think that goes back to why they did Google and not the source. Because if you remove the ability to find it, it doesn't matter where it is, it's going to be sitting there idle. If it's in one place and everyone can find it, that's fine. If it's a million places and no one can find it, it doesn't matter how where it is.
Well, I was thinking more of distributed searches for it as well. There's more than just Google, Bing, and like three search engines out there.
No, that's true, but most people would tend to stick to the basics. The folk who use things like DuckDuckGo are people who know more than most.
I've never heard of it.
It's a pretty cool search engine.
There's your litmus test. What is it?
It's a search engine that does not
go.
Okay.
They sort of pride themselves on not doing a lot of the things that Google gets.
Right. It doesn't keep track of requests and things like that. So when you put your request in, that's the only time it's seen that request.
Yeah. Cool. I learned stuff.
All right. So the internet is kind of this big international amorphous thing. How do they determine that Google is operating in Spain and the New York Times isn't?
That's an easy decision. That has everything to do with the jurisdictional language that's involved in your particular constitution, code, statutes, whatever it is. So, for example, in Georgia, I can sue anyone in Georgia who has an office here in Georgia. If you have an office and a registered agent, you live here and I can sue you. Speaking of corporation, if you're a person and you live here in Georgia, I can sue you. If you're a person and you live in North Carolina, or you're a corporation who only has offices in North Carolina, I can't sue you in Georgia unless I can prove that you've done a bunch of business in Georgia, or there's some other
minimum contacts
that I can reach you through what's called a long arm statute. So if you, short story, live in Georgia or do business in Georgia, I'm going to be able to sue you in Georgia. The same is true for Spain. If you live in Spain or you do business in Spain, I'm going to be able to sue you in Spain. Now, some guy in Spain may have a subscription to the New York Times, but that's not necessarily going to be enough to get you a jurisdictional hurdle.
But there's a whole bunch of jurisdictional rules that lawyers, especially litigators, know exactly what they are. And in Spain, they will say, "Oh, what are the who can we reach? Who can we not reach?" There's a whole legal framework to decide whether he could reach the New York Times or not. And chances are, I would say not.
Right.
But you can Google, certainly yes. Reach Google. New York Times, no, unless they have certain contacts there. Right. But that's a legal question, and an easy one.
Yeah. Right. And just off the top of my head, Google had to register google.es, so they had to go to a Spanish registrar. Google is super, they have servers literally all over the planet to try to make the service as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. So probably they have some servers in Spain just so that Google is fast for Spanish users. But the kicker is almost certainly they have sold ads to Spanish-based
Absolutely.
Businesses, so
Absolutely.
They have taken money from Spanish-based businesses.
They're certainly doing business in Spain without a question. And
that
even if they don't have an office, and I bet Google has an office somewhere in Spain.
Sure.
I would be willing to bet, yeah.
We've kind of come at this pretty unilaterally from the direction of, okay, this is absolutely ridiculous from a legal standpoint. For the sake of conversation, can you think of any reason why this could be a good thing? Say, for example, my recently deceased daughter has a Facebook page that I want to take down, or maybe Northwest doesn't want to find out how her mom got famous.
I think there are definitely some legitimate uses for it. I mean, we have in our own laws here where criminal records when you are a minor get, in certain circumstances, erased at a certain time. And if they're erased from your permanent record, why should they be out there on Google for people to see? And certainly if you're 50 and you did something when you were 11 that's in some weird news article that has really no bearing on what you are as a person now. I I kind of agree with the philosophically, at least, right, the concept that, you know, people ought to be able to forget what happened 45 years ago if it really has, if there really is no public interest
but
in
it. But the question is a hard one. One of the big problems with the European ones, they threw it to Google and said, okay, go work that out, which is absurd. But I think from a policy standpoint, I don't know what the best answer would be. Because, yeah, if you're 50 and you did something dumb when you were 11, we've already as a society pretty much decided juvie stuff should be knocked off. Well, what if you were, oh, I don't know, from a famous political family and you were driving right home from a fraternity party and drowned a woman? You know, should that follow you to the grave, or should that not be available to people when you run for president?
Right.
And, Kennedy would have loved for that to have been forgotten. And, you know, in spite of all his daddy's money, he couldn't get that completely forgotten. He still right was a candidate. That tells you how we forget a lot as it is. But would you want that kind of thing, for, especially for someone who might end up being president when he was 21 and left a woman to drown? Well, he didn't kill her, but, you know, okay, so we know that he left a woman to drown, then died, or then lied and tried to cover it up. Is this who you want as your president? Nah. But if we can cover things up when we were young and 21, by most people's count, who are older than 21, counts as young and stupid. When you're 21, you're not stupid, you're just young and brilliant. Later you realize that maybe you didn't know everything. But where do you draw the line?
Right.
And how do you make a rule that draws that line?
Right. That's
and that's hard.
That's really the issue. I don't want to give the impression that I think the right to be forgotten is ridiculous. I loved growing up in the 70s and 80s when nothing was recorded.
I'm glad I've been forgotten.
But right, I do not like that this is an artifact of the digital age. I do not like that I have to come here every year and talk about revenge porn, because revenge porn is a thing, because that's ridiculous. But the even more ridiculous is the idea of how do you legally implement a workable framework for what can be forgotten. Your deceased daughter's Facebook page should probably be forgotten. Your
if you want it to be.
Right,
if you want it to stay there as memorial, then it should stay there. And most of us think, well, you ought to make that decision. Well, how did I make a law saying
right
it's like, well, okay, for right deceased minor children or deceased adult children, the member, you know, the closest family member, well, then you're going to have the mother fighting the ex-husband. And, you know, what law do I make? How do
right
I write that rule? Because I don't even know what the right answer is.
And the DUI law, sure, I don't care if you had a DUI when you were 18 and you're, you know.
But what if you had 10?
But if you had, right, you have that. Or what if you're my bus driver and you got it 6 months ago? You know, what if you're my bus driver and you got it even 3 or 4 years ago? You're the bus driver. I want to know that.
And there's also an associative issue there, especially in the U.S. If you are in any way linked to some sort of a sex case, especially with minors,
mm-hmm,
even if you were the person who was giving evidence, 10 years from now, all people remember is that person was linked with that case and not the fact that it was a good association.
Hmm.
I mean, JonBenet Ramsey, anybody linked with that case is going to be always linked with that case. And there's just a perception that they probably did something bad.
Right.
Right.
Even if they had absolutely nothing to do with it, they probably did something bad.
People will assume if you're accused that you're guilty of
right
something, even if that's not the case.
Right. And so in cases like that, you've done nothing wrong. Someone who misidentified you and later said, oh, sorry, my bad, I misidentified the person. But people can go and search that now and they can find that.
Mm-hmm. And they might find the accusation, not the whoops, I'm sorry, I was wrong.
Right.
Because one of those is probably published much more loudly.
Right.
When you report child abuse, people say, well, why didn't you report it yesterday? You must have been involved.
Coming from it from a, you guys are kind of like right on the same track that I was thinking about, but coming from it from a public record standpoint, you had mentioned that there are no more journalists around who search through public records. I'm one of them. I just don't get paid to do it. It's on my weekend time.
But she didn't exist. She said you didn't have a job.
yeah, that's about right. So from a public record standpoint, though, especially with very slow progress, but some progress is being made, especially at the local level, where public records are being more searchable online.
Mm-hmm.
And well, as a journalist, I find that's really awesome. But you know, to a certain extent, when you're a minor, obviously we have a right to get that expunged. But you know, you're breaking that 18, 19, or whatever, and somebody needs to go back and search what you did. like several years down the road or whatever, if there's, you know, political candidates 30, 40 years from now being vetted, although I'm sure they'll probably be vetted through Facebook and Twitter. Did you say this when you were 11?
Mm-hmm. Nope, didn't do it.
But yeah, as far as like the public record standpoint, I'm trying to wonder what you guys have, what thoughts you have on whether or not there's rights to be forgotten if the record exists in like a public record somewhere. Because I feel like that should be always memorialized. I'm all about like keeping that open and right, within that, the public view.
That's exactly the issue. Where's
that
line?
I want it taken down.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're only dealing with the right to be forgotten only deals with those issues. They only deal with true public knowledge. You don't need a right to be forgotten to have fake stuff removed. That's defamation. You don't need a right to be forgotten to have private stuff removed. That's your right of privacy, your right of publicity. You need the right to be forgotten to have true public information removed.
That's actually, I would change that to not necessarily always true because of the association issue.
Well, true.
But right. Actual real information.
Right. Yeah. Reported public information.
That was not, you know. I guess that, but you know, once the newspaper articles are out there, the retractions are always very small print.
Right.
And the,
yes.
Oh, well, no, we didn't mean that she did that. We meant someone with a similar name did that. Well, now Google it, what do you get? But that's a different issue. You do have a right to have those corrected. And now, again, the system is not perfect. You'll never get all of it fixed, and the association thing is a good example. The newspaper article was true. You were associated with that case. Do you have a right to make the newspaper take it down? Hell no, that what they reported was true. And if they did report a correction, well, they did that. But it doesn't fix it when you're the victim of it. The right to be forgotten is a slightly different issue because it really is all about it's true and it's public and I want it erased anyway.
She's had enough for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, you have? I'm so sorry.
And
I wanted to mention real quick. I don't know if it has to do with this or not, but I've had a problem of being ghosted on Facebook. I don't know if you know the term. I'm probably making it up, where somebody went into my Facebook account, stole my pictures, stole my information, stole my face, set up an account with my name, all my things. All my friends got notices saying, I've had a problem, refriend me. And I didn't find out for days until one friend said, I've been talking to you for half an hour on Facebook, haven't I? And I said, no.
I've heard of that happening. Mm-hmm.
All right, quick question on that. When you say they got into your account, do you mean they actually logged in as you, or they simply went to what you had public and copied?
I have no idea how they got the picture and all my friends. I have no idea, but they set themselves up as me with their own Facebook page with my picture and everything.
Well, Facebook is notorious for having labyrinthine security settings that change constantly and no one understands exactly how they work. And so you can lock your Facebook account down so that only your friends can see your stuff, it's really hard to get
was.
It. Oh, right, it was locked down?
No, but the problem there is that if they're friends with one of your friends, depending on what your settings are, they can see you via your friends.
Right.
And I had to go in and tell all my friends, it's not me if you're being refriended, and I had to go to Facebook. But it took Facebook quite a few days for them to take this person off as me.
Right.
Well, but again, that's something that would...
The policies
be a false
there.
Information.
Did Facebook?
That's a difficult technology issue.
They should take it down eventually. That was another one.
Well, the thing is,
which seems like forever when your friends are talking to some creepy stranger, but in terms of administration, that's pretty quick.
And that's actually pretty fast, simply because, similar to revenge porn, you know, someone sets up a site and then the fake one goes and says, hey, the real one's ghosting me.
Right.
So
right.
Facebook does need time to actually go through and verify and see, all right, when was this account opened? And again, it's a person who's doing this, and they've got, as you're saying, it's a desk and it's a pile of these things they have to work through.
We've seen that with DMCAs. People will scrape content off of blogs, mm-hmm. post it somewhere else, and then file a DMCA against the original blog.
I've actually got a friend in the UK. They write music for TV and movies, and they've actually had DMCA requests that YouTube has taken down their own work off of their own channel.
Right. Wow. Right. Yeah.
And then had to go fight back and say, no, we are the actual originals. We will send you the like original score we wrote for this thing. And that was a fight that they had to get their own stuff back into their own channel.
Since this ruling is specifically about Google, and Google has a specific way of operating that puts itself in every country around the world, and it could be sued easily by lots of different people. Isn't it just kind of delaying the inevitable that we'll have some company that, you know, like DuckDuckGo, that is able to kind of skirt these issues and it becomes popular? And essentially we have like you were saying, we have archives already. They keep all this information. Eventually, it'll get back on the internet and available.
But
and
the minute, I was ready to cut you off. The minute DuckDuckGo becomes the popular go-to source for avoiding the Google rights to be forgotten, the Spanish court's going to turn around and say DuckDuckGo needs to do it too.
And then another site then another will pop court, up doing what DuckDuckGo has been doing.
Because what they've done, this ruling was against Google, and only Google really needs to comply with the court order. But the court has decided that this right exists. This right is a thing. And in the European Union, you can be forgotten. And Google is the defendant and is the only one who is bound by that court order. But Bing isn't just a nice guy. Bing isn't doing this because Microsoft is so nice to their customers. Okay, it's because they know that tomorrow somebody's going to sue Bing and get the exact same finding. And then tomorrow, somebody's going to sue DuckDuckGo and get the exact
same
finding. Google
happens to be the one targeted, and so the other search engines know that they're going to have to comply with this new right, even though no one knows what it is.
As part of my security stuff, I use background checkers. They go out, and instead of doing searches, they actually pull the original sources, like the courthouses and everything else. Yeah. How would they be affected by this? Because they're no longer basically just doing searches on the subject. They're actively polling your courthouses where this original data still is.
They shouldn't be impacted at all.
So there's your loophole.
Okay, guys, that's the end of the panel. I hope you have a lovely day.